Last.
Time.
On.
Doc.
Of.
Shame. Fuck!
I wish you the best of luck.
No, you don't.
Why would I not?
Heather does not cover her mouth when she sneezes, which is why I'm going to blame the COVID pandemic on Heather. And so, when I wrote down my notes, I wrote down the quote and then wrote LMAO, shut up for 16.
Welcome, campers, to the Dock of Shame podcast. My name is Matt, and joined with me are...
My name is Chris, and I took a shower for the first time in 5 months.
My name is Matt, and I watched Chris shower for the first time in 5 months.
I knew something like that was coming.
My name is Gabe, and I ordered 5 guys through DoorDash, but they only gave me one.
Oh. Such a shame.
All right. Well, welcome to the podcast. There is a very important historical milestone in our country that happened today. And that is that Baby Nut grew up to be Peanut Jr. and is now 21 years old. What do you all think about that?
I want him to fucking disintegrate in front of my eyes.
Peanut Jr. is old enough to Peanut Jr., if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Which by that I mean drink.
But he's Peanut Jr., which means he's in college now. Probably. I didn't watch the video. But
come on, we need this investigative reporting.
Okay, I watched it. Like,
okay, what happens?
The video boils down to him, like, at a bar, saying, like, oh, I'm 21 now, I can do adult things. And then the bartender's like, I need to see your ID, because you look like a fucking child. And then
he does.
Yeah, and then he gives him his ID, and, like, they show the ID, and it's just like, I just wanted to.
He gives him
to
the
not
finger.
Be on this planet anymore.
Gives him the finger.
Yeah, and then he says, "Suck my left nut."
That's it.
Oh God. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Okay.
Wait,
well,
is that actually a thing? Was that actually what happened?
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wait, what happened?
The finger and sucking the left nut.
Yeah, he's 21. He don't give two fucks.
Okay. All right.
Wow. We really, that the planters have really gone, have fallen down quite the cliff.
The recording knows what Gabe said. We don't know what Gabe said, and I want to keep it that way until we edit.
This is wild. Mr. Peanut
Wait,
died.
Did you not hear me?
No, you cut out. Yeah. You cut out at the very end of that.
Oh boy.
Guys, yeah, I'm having an identity crisis. Mr. Peanut died to save me, Matt Walsh, and now he's the exact same age as me.
That's the fucking weird part, is that the comedian in the commercial where Mr. Peanut died was named Matt Walsh.
Also, Matt Walsh, when you said falling off the cliff, I was going to say it's too soon.
Too soon.
I don't care. All right, anyways, this is a podcast about Total Drama Island, not peanut lore.
Fuck.
But, like, if a peanut...
Now you tell me!
Less than, like,
this is why
months,
the commercial podcast will come in mind.
It's very questionable in my eyes.
Will come in handy, is for these very conversations.
Alright, so, the notes that I took on this, I actually took a couple weeks ago. So, if there's something weird in these notes, I rewatched the episode today, but if there's something weird in the notes themselves, know that I haven't seen these in a while. And I should probably link those to y'all.
Yes.
So that you can see them too.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
Let's do it.
We lost Gabe.
Let's a go.
Gabe is back. Hello, Gabe.
My internet crapped out. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine. Okay.
Open up the Dock of Shame.
The Dock of Shame, spelled D-O-C. That's a secret for y'all at home. The Google Doc that I take notes on is titled Dock of Shame, spelled D-O-C.
It is episode 12.
I thought that was pretty clever.
Yes, very yes. Clever, very clever.
Very clever. Matt, you're right. The notes are a little bit weird. All they say is butts over and over again.
Yeah,
that's
like
what happened in the episode, right? Yeah.
Oh, I see. You were very focused on
Owen. Put it through Google Translate. Uh-huh. Put it through Google Translate.
Uh-huh. Into what? What language?
What language?
Whatever you want to read.
Oh, okay.
Is that like a universal language the whole time was butts? I had no idea about this.
I don't know.
You know, like how in D&D there's common?
The butts is common.
D&D there's common. There's also that one like Chinese poem that is it's the same syllable used over and over again, but the meaning changes, and it's like a very like involved poem, but it's just the same syllable over and over.
Do you want me to read it right now? Ooh, woo, 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 woo.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Okay, let's get started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing too important about the intro, but Chris does, again, say, it's the most dramatic bonfire ceremony yet, and I might actually agree with him this time.
Hoo-hoo! Teaser!
Foreshadowing. After the theme song, we see Duncan, he's carving a skull into the wall because he's edgy. Harold comes out and goes, okay, who's made s'mores out of my underwear? Which is a strange situation that Harold finds himself in. A, because the same thing happened with sandwiches a couple episodes ago. And B, because why is he specifically eating s'mores in the morning?
I don't think he's eating s'mores in the morning. I think they just like took his underwear, covered it in
s'mores.
And then put them in very large s'mores.
Yeah, okay, I think that's. Sense. I think he was just trying to find his underwear again.
Sorry, go on. The s'mores. But don't go past the scene. I have a thing to say at the very end.
Okay. He also throws his underwear away. It grosses out Courtney, and then he's like, Kara probably says something like, "Gosh," and then Duncan and Jeff mentioned that sometimes he just makes it too easy.
I wanted to point out that for when they put it in the s'more, there is no marshmallow. And this is very important, as for once the underwear is thrown to the ground in front of Courtney, it is covered in chocolate. So out of context, it looks like it's Harold's shit-covered underwear. And Courtney's like, ew. But if it was covered in marshmallow...
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh.
We're not.
Oh, no.
Bad. Okay. Chef makes the announcement.
Moving on.
Chef makes the announcement. Cutting it out. Over the intercom. Moving it on. The challenge today is going to be a boot camp that Chef runs. Chef was in the military, presumably the Navy because of the anchor tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I don't really read into those things. I just figured military, so he's going to be aggressive as hell. I don't even think of Navy or whatever.
They're all lined up. He's doing drill sergeant stuff. You know the stuff.
Yeah.
He's shouting in the campers' faces with the megaphone. He says the line, "I do not expect everyone to come out alive." And basically it's just an endurance challenge to get through all of the tests that Chef has for them, and whoever is left standing in the end wins it for their team.
Now, did he mention what he was referred to as at this point?
Yes, Master Chief.
Yeah,
which is the Halo thing.
Yeah, I know a lot of Halo fans out there are hurting right now, but just know that Halo has shown up somewhere. And that is in a 2007 cartoon in episode 13.
I'd also like to point out too, when he's like lining them up, he has like this like stick pulled out, and you know, he's slapping them when like, stand up straight, you know, like arms at your side, look forward, head up. And he, for no reason, just excessive, well, I'm saying for a good reason, he just excessively slaps Harold in like, like 10 different places. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Fair.
He mentions that when they're ready to give up, they have to ring the bell, which only one person actually rings the bell this entire episode. And day one will end when someone drops out. Gwen mentions in the confessional that she has to say she's a little impressed with how Chef is handling this, which I thought was pretty funny. The first challenge itself is to hold canoes above their head, one canoe per team, and no one gets to eat until someone drops out.
Quick pop quiz. What was the thing with running? What was the vocabulary word with running with canoes over your head?
Oh, fortage.
Oh my god, I can't believe you remembered that.
I edited the episode, so I heard it a couple times.
So real quick, I have a quick question, because it's going to relate to something that happens later in this competition.
Yes.
Was one of the objectives of this holding the canoe was that everyone at all times must have their hands on the canoe?
Yes, and that's going to... Yes.
Okay,
We're going to get to that point.
Just curious.
I know what you're talking about.
Yep.
We cut to later. Everyone is hungry, and Chris and Chef are sitting on top of them. I think Chef is on the bass, and that's a little bit of a disadvantage, because Chef is probably twice the size that Chris is.
Right.
But it's fine. Then we get a quick cut of Jeff, who is holding onto a fishing line, notably not the canoe, and manages to attach it to Harold's underwear without him noticing. Pulls the fishing line up, like, yanks his underwear, and then Harold yells out, covering where his underwear was yanked up, and Chef goes down and is like, is there a problem? Harold's like, no, but still has his hands on the canoe, and Chef looks.
So, like, I don't know, the camera crew, or, like, producers, or anyone filming that particular moment would have said, hey, Harold took his hand off of the canoe. Like,
you make a good point, but I refer you to the end of this episode.
I was about to say, if there's anything that shows, like, how, like, strict they are on the rules.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. I'm just saying, though, that it's I just wanted in that very moment for Duncan and Jeff to get theirs. That's all.
Yeah. Chef is telling war stories. I think.
I have it written down.
Regale us.
Well, he talks about he's like 25 went into that jungle. Only 5 of us came back out. Something like that.
Yeah.
And then
Gwen's like, what?
Yeah, I remember I was like, this is fucking wild. And then Gwen is like, ugh. Like, this is so weird and boring.
Well, she's like, what war were you in? And Chef is like, mind your own business.
This is almost completely off topic, but that line reminded me a lot of, there's a movie out there called Master of Disguise, which is one of the worst films out there that's also still really fun to watch, with Dana Carvey. And he played like some guy on a boat at one point where he said, like, you know, I'm gonna butcher the line, but it was something like 10 kids go into the water. Only 5 got out. The ice cream man got the rest. Like, just something like that. It's a joke. It's like there's a famous line that things are referenced to, but it's very, very funny.
Lindsay finally decides that she can't take it anymore, and she walks over to the bell, rings it with her head because she's so tired. And the bass win the first challenge, at least it seems.
I also think it's because she lost feeling in her arms.
Yes, that too. Which I don't necessarily blame her, but Chef apparently blames her because he says, you have nothing to be ashamed of except for being a baby that let your team down.
Yeah, just fucking let the blood flow of your arms just fucking not exist.
Oh, totally. Well, there's a challenge in Survivor that's, you literally just have to hold your arm up, and it's tied to a chain, and that chain is tied to a bucket of water, and if you, like, move your arm too much, you'll pull the water down on you. Kind of the same thing.
That's really, yeah, that's so brutal.
That is a brutal challenge. They have 10 minutes to eat before their night, quote-unquote, night training. And the food is garbage. No, like, actual garbage from the trash, not just, like, bad food.
Yeah, that
banana peel did look pretty good, though.
I thought that was so gross.
Why? Chris and Chef mentioned that they're going to go to craft services, which of course they would. Courtney decidedly does not want to eat garbage. And Duncan and Jeff come up to Harold because they feel bad and decide to give him apple juice. Except it's not apple juice. It's kitchen grease.
When I was a kid, I thought it was urine.
I thought that it was going to be urine, too.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah. Corny scolds them, and then Duncan's like, hey, we know you like me.
Fuck Duncan. Fuck, fuck Duncan. Fuck him. Fuck him.
That's so funny. I'm enjoying Duncan.
Fuck him. It is definitely not excusing him in saying this, but it is like a time period thing, and they are teenagers.
I don't care.
But he's still being a dick.
I don't care. The dude's a fucking asshole.
We cut to what the night training is, and it's basically I don't even know what you would call this. It's not a dance contest. It's just they're trying to copy the moves that Chef is doing.
I have a note here.
Is there something specific with the animation here, Matt, that like makes them all move?
Well, I would assume. I mean, Total Drama is a show that I think relies on like puppetry animation. I could be wrong, but then I would assume that they would use the exact same animation for all of the characters, which is why it might look a little weird that they are so in sync. But I was going to say that. Chef dancing and then the campers having to keep up, because I watched this with somebody else and they reminded me that this was actually a game on Cartoon Network's website that you would have to follow along with Chef's dance moves.
Okay.
And it was a kind of Dance Dance Revolution kind of thing where you'd have to like press the arrows in sequence.
Yeah.
I just have to wonder why they specifically chose Michael Jackson's Thriller for the dance sequence.
Because it's you know.
I mean, I don't know if it was... I mean, it's obviously an ode to it. I doubt that they actually used the song, but I don't know. Like, it's the thing is about... Before we know it, we've learned how problematic Michael Jackson is. You know, Thriller was so iconic for its time for the dance that it created. It was
absolutely
one of the most iconic music videos of all time, if not the most iconic music videos of all time. But it was also just like, if you learn how to do the Thriller dance, like people were into it. Like, it's so catchy. It's so like you get into this like being this like almost zombified human being while you're on the dance floor. It's cool. I enjoy it as much as possible.
Yeah. Also, the close up of Chef's hip thrusts.
That was actually a note that I also took.
They had to do it three times.
Yeah, rule of three.
It was like, God, it felt like anime Thriller that they were just padding for time. Like when like a character gets punched, a character gets punched, so for effect they play it like three times.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that one football. That it was like. I don't know if it was.
The fucking Key and Peele.
It was Key and Peele. Yeah. It was Key and Peele.
It was the they could only do two hip thrusts and the third one was a penalty.
Yes. So good.
Yeah. Duncan goes over, turns the music on the boombox off. Is like, oh, we're done, right? Someone dropped out, and Chef's like, we're done when I say we're done. Gwen has to go to the bathroom and then has to mop the bathroom instead.
You know what? I would much rather do that than like that kind of physical like dance training.
Yeah, me too. Right back, Abe.
I don't know why this keeps happening, but let's just keep going.
Okay, as long as you're still recording, that's all.
Yeah, I am.
Cool. The next challenge is they have to write a 300-word essay, which I'm pretty sure isn't a lot.
No,
the journalists.
No,
in the
it's
call.
It's not.
It's
the
not.
Average parent.
Journalists in the call can attest. But
I'm not even a journalist.
I write for a living, or at least for right now. And I've written 700 word articles, like at least two 700 word articles every single week until I was laid off. And now lately I've been writing three like 1,000 word articles every single week.
Yeah, 300 words is not a hard thing.
It's nothing.
Write.
You do that, you
it's
can
not.
Do that
according to Google.
Hour.
According to Google, a paragraph is usually about 100 to 200 words long.
So they have to write two paragraphs.
Two paragraphs. And there's, yeah. It's not like they're like five. They're 16. This isn't hard.
I know.
Yeah.
So we cut later. We see it's 3 a.m. and everybody except Harold, notably, has bags under their eyes. They're very tired. When Chef takes Harold's essay, he's still writing, like, the pencil is still moving as the paper is being taken away from him.
Nice.
And this is actually, I have the censored thing up for the next episode we're recording tonight. But this is a moment where Harold says crap in the original and gosh in this one.
Because they had to really, they really have to hammer home the Napoleon Dynamite.
Gosh. Yes. Gosh. They get to Duncan's essay, and it's just a bunch of varies. It's like, Chef Hatchet is very, 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 very the entire time. And of course it's 300 words. They're just all varies. And Chef is, of course, mad at that. He slips on Owen's drool, and DJ and Trent get knocked out of the competition because they fell asleep.
It's 300 words.
It's 300 words. It's not that hard, y'all.
But you can't blame them because they were very, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
They're very, yeah.
Yeah. Duncan, I wrote, is just he's just being a butthead to Chef, and Courtney's trying to stop him. And I think this is in confessional. Duncan just goes, she wants me.
No, he goes to Jeff, turns to him after she walks away. Says, she wants me. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Duncan's like talking back to Chef. I am enjoying.
I'm
enjoying
good.
That. I'm enjoying yeah. that. I'm not enjoying the court. This whole, you know what? I will hold off my comments because a lot of it relates to things that happen later in the episode.
Okay.
I think that his behavior through this point of the series, even before, you know, the events of this episode, have just been kind of shown to me how much of a stupid misogynistic douchebag he is.
Yeah.
And I really don't have the episode really tries to make him redeemable in some ways, and does, you know, with the chef stuff. I think tries to do that. It does nothing for me, especially with these comments that he makes about Courtney constantly.
Next up is an obstacle course. It's just like a training ground. It's got walls. It's got tires. It's got ropes that you gotta swing through. And they basically have to keep running it until they can all complete it in under a minute, which is, like, if you keep doing aerobic stuff for forever, you're gonna get slower and slower. It really fucking sucks. A lot of mishaps happen throughout all this. Owen gets stuck in a tire. Harold inhales mud and has to go to the infirmary. He's out of the challenge. I'll be on you like stink on a poop wagon is what Chef says to, I forget who.
Stink on, I didn't even realize that's what he said.
Yes.
He says it so freaking quickly.
Yeah. He says it to someone, I forget who, but he's trying to get them to run again. Owen, I wrote, falls wall. Owen tries to climb on a wall, and then through his own weight, makes it fall over on top of him. Heather is stuck upside down with her leg tied in a rope. Lashana is sinking in the mud. And because Duncan commented on it, Chef says, drop and give me push-ups. And Duncan thanks him and kisses him on the nose.
Me. That's how I talk shit.
Of course,
yeah.
Chef is pissed off and sends Duncan to solitary confinement in the boathouse. Duncan's like, yeah, whatever. And then when he gets there, it's like freaky because there's a lot of like sharp things, I guess.
Sure.
And Duncan's just like, should have kept my big mouth shut.
Well, wait, if there's sharp things around, then that's like, Duncan, that's perfect for him. That, yeah, this is his perfect aesthetic.
Wait, did I miss it? Did we say what happened to Harold in the obstacle course?
I said he inhaled mud.
Okay, because he inhales it, and then he projectile vomits mud.
Yes.
And I'm just like, there's so much, like, I remembered there being throw up in this show, but I just forgot how much there was.
Oh, there's so much.
This isn't even like episode. The last time
we have not got to the worst episode of it.
This show, love it, hate it. It relies heavily on gross humor.
I feel like that was the case with a ton of cartoons of this era. Just trying to, especially the
I don't know about this show though. This
especially
show,
the ones like aimed at older crowds.
Especially the Canadian ones.
I think it's the Canadian aspect of it, because I feel like the Canadian.
Did Johnny Test do this?
Johnny, no. I don't think Johnny Test. I don't know if Johnny Test was Canadian, but
it is. I thought it was.
No. Okay. If it was a different studio.
It wasn't.
No,
fresh.
Johnny Test was created by the creator of Big Time Rush and Ned's the Classified.
Okay, yeah, I knew that.
Which is wild to me when I found that out.
It is an American-Canadian television series, so it was in some capacity continued by a Canadian studio.
But
I know that. Yeah. Sorry. I know that Ed and Nettie was also Canadian.
I didn't know that.
I felt like the cartoons of this era outside of Total Drama, wasn't it like Chowder and Flapjack and stuff like that?
Yes. So, I remember
that was a gross, they were weird. They weren't like gross.
I remember the Thursday night lineup of Chowder, Flapjack, Total Drama, and Johnny Test.
Okay.
I would like to say though that 16, which I do believe is like the same studio as Total Drama, definitely has its like. While I do really like 16, and if you guys like Total Drama, I do think that you'll like 16 too. It definitely, I don't think it has as much throw up, but I do remember scenes of throw up.
I'm sure.
I know, like, the what's, I forget his name.
Jude?
Like, no, not Jude. There was the tan guy.
I remember who
the nondescript. Nondescript ethnicity guy.
Yes. the one who always gets like
he shits himself in one episode.
Oh my god.
God.
Ooh. I think that this particular studio was just a lot more edgier about that stuff because if you think about the other cartoons, like I said, like Chowder and Flapjack, when I remember watching of those, like they were weird. They definitely pushed some limits, but they weren't like.
They weren't gross.
They weren't gross.
No, maybe
humor.
Maybe Flapjack would be gross in the sense that
it was unsettling.
Yes, but then again, that was sometimes the appeal too.
Yes. I think this studio, like Fresh, I think was what we were able to push more limits as a Canadian studio because you're allowed to say crap in a TV series, not on Cartoon Network because they said to censor it, but they could say it in whatever network that aired in Canada. They were able to say words like crap and stuff. And I think they were able to kind of push the limits a little bit more, have the scenes that they kind of were able to have on the show, which involved nudity, censor nudity.
Totally.
You know, I think they were able to push it a lot more.
I disconnected again, so I was probably talking while you guys were talking.
Okay.
I will fix that in post.
Okay.
Courtney. Courtney is they're in the mess hall. They're eating garbage food, but it's not actual garbage this time. And she decides that she's going to go check on Duncan in the boathouse. And Jeff is teasing her, but he's like, "You like him?" And she gets defensive about it. When she shows up, Duncan goes, "Princess," and they have a bit of a moment. Duncan mentions he would rather eat bait than the shit that Chef served them. There's an exchange they have that kind of sums it up. Courtney asks, "Why do you egg Chef on like that?" And Duncan says, "Why are you so uptight?" This relationship between them that's like, this is the rule breaker and this is the one who follows the rules and wants to make the rules. At the end, Duncan convinces Courtney that they're going to break into craft services and steal some food.
Don't you feel like this all accelerates rather quickly? I understand, like, with the results of the episode that they kind of had to, but I don't know. There's just something about it that felt very unnatural to me.
I don't know.
With Courtney's character specifically.
I don't know. The pacing didn't seem too off to me.
Yeah, I think it was okay. I think the hinting, at least up to this point, of Duncan and Courtney being a thing.
I think the annoying thing about it was that it wasn't, Courtney never really hinted at it. She was angry at him all the time because he was being a dick. And Duncan would just drop, like, oh, she likes me. Oh, there, she's totally mine. Like, fucking, like, saying that all the time.
No, there were moments, though, where Courtney was, like, the whole bit where she was like, as if, no way, not going to happen in the diary room. That was a hint. That was a big, like,
and a lot of, and a lot of
Courtney might, and Courtney a lot doesn't of, want to admit of, that she has something for him.
Yeah, and a lot of her kind of, like, nagging, like, don't do that, like, you're gonna, like, get in trouble. Like, we need you.
She wouldn't do that if...
That was any
if
other character.
She didn't care what happened to him.
Yeah.
I think that... But I felt like Courtney's character was doing that to everybody that was useful. Like, Duncan was useful for their team. Like, that was her character generally beyond just the Duncan thing. I understand what you're saying. Like, I understand, like, The show wanted this to happen. The show was, yeah. And what made it very clear in that they wanted these two to come together, and through the as if the like how much she was trying. But I guess what I lack is, like, the motivation for, like, why would, and I guess it's, I think it, for me, it's the bias of really not understanding why people like Duncan. But what is the motivation for her to, like, I don't see it. I guess I just don't see where, why is Courtney loving Duncan? Like, I don't, like, that to me is just so, it's a little mind blowing.
Teenagers, dude. Teenagers.
I
wish I could give a better explanation, but that is my explanation. Sure.
Yes, please do.
So, Courtney is very much portrayed as this very kind of, preppy, kind of follows the rules, kind of, I guess, a fuddy-duddy in your book, in which she has always, you know, tried to follow the rules, always tried to be good, and because of that, she thinks that that is what leads to success, and by seeing someone like Duncan, who gets by not following the rules, by you know, really just doing whatever he wants, and not only do I think that she's a bit jealous of that kind of freedom, but that she's kind of interested that somebody can just not, that somebody can just, like, ignore authority like that. However, she is still at odds with that feeling of, like, ugh, well then, like, he's just an idiot for not, like, following the rules, because he kind of is. But at the same time, she is envious that she doesn't have the same kind of freedom and kind of, like, I guess, like, sense of adventure as he does, where he doesn't worry about the rules. He does what he wants, and he takes what he wants. It's that kind of, like, very by-the-books character being interested in the bad boy archetype, because they don't listen to nobody, and that's really interesting to them. And of course, now once Courtney later kind of gets a taste for it, you can kind of see a taste for not following the rules. You can see where that infatuation with, like, not following the rules and, you know, that rigidness and lack of freedom from, like, always following the rules, what kind of effect that's kind of had on her.
I think that's an excellent explanation on that.
Excellent analysis.
Because I think that's hard for me to have really gotten from her, but I think that in explaining that I could definitely see where that is the case. So I appreciate you explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely, and it's definitely, like, a kind of trope you can see in, like, a lot of, I think, like, teen kind of stories where you have the bad boy that's, like, you know, that the preppy girl is, like, interested in because, you know, he doesn't care about the rules, and right, I always did.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, it definitely, I think that's maybe that's why I'm finding it not great, is because it's following that very same trope that's just so obnoxious to me.
Yeah, but and I think Duncan is a bit more than just a bad boy archetype. And not in a good way, where he definitely has misogynistic traits. He's definitely a bully. And he has, like, definitely a big mouth to him. And there's things that I like about his character and things that I don't.
Been in and out of juvie, too.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, well, right. Like, I feel like, I don't want this to come across as me being like, anyone who goes to juvie sucks ass. Like, no. Like,
no, it's much more his demeaning and misogynistic nature.
Exactly. That's what's really frustrating to me while watching him. And when I see, like, when I see him almost kind of, like, get his way in things, I think from my point of view, it's just, it gets very frustrating to me as a viewer who just does not. Who has, especially very recently, which I won't get into, like, I feel like the bad guys always fucking win in some ways, and it's just, that's always a frustrating thing to watch, and I feel like Duncan just has, to this point, has just been portrayed as a bad guy, who is, as of now, kind of, like, he got some punishment in this episode, and we'll talk about later, but in a way, kind of gets his way.
Yeah.
With Courtney, specifically.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they go to sneak into the craft services, and we hear Chef, and he's telling the exact same war story that he told earlier to Chris. while they're in there, they're sneaking under the tables. They have another conversation. Chris says, "I am nothing without my stubble."
Okay.
And Chef says, "Amen to that."
I have two notes here.
Okay.
The first is, Chef is telling that exact same war story. 25 of us went into the jungle. Only five came out. 2 seconds later, literally 2 seconds. It's like I know, like you said, they're crawling under the table, but it is actual 2 seconds. You know, I am nothing without my stubble. Amen. Amen to that. It's like, where is the segue in this conversation?
It just happened.
Just imagine only 25 of us went into this jungle. Only 5 came out. You know, I am nothing without my stubble. Amen.
it reminds me of like video game dialogue when like you're in a stealth game and you're hearing the dialogue of guards.
Oh, definitely.
It's just on like a loop.
Oh, definitely. It felt like chatter that they were just like pre-programmed to say while they were like sneaking through the level. And here was the other thing. For those listening at home, I have just sent my co-hosts a picture of Chris McClane, but photoshopped without his stubble.
Oh no. He is nothing without his stubble.
I feel like I disagree because I don't know. Like, he doesn't. If you told me that wasn't photoshopped, I probably would not have said anything. Like, I would be like,
I do want to point out that when I searched Chris McClane, the first autocomplete after it was Chris McClane Crimes.
Oh.
There's him with his stubble.
Oh, I was just about to post that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. For whatever reason to me, when I saw it, I was just like, I don't... Is that photoshopped? I'm not too sure.
No, yeah. So now his whole face is that kind of like orange tan, and it is like, yeah, the stubble like pulls the look together.
He looks way too cheery. Like he looks like one of the teenager characters.
Also, that butt chin really stands out without the
yes
without
the yes yes. I'm glad we could discuss this. Matt, you remember like 4 weeks ago when I was like, I have a surprise during the episode I'd like to share, but it is a visual
thing.
This was it.
You've been sitting on this for weeks. Mm-hmm. So not only do Duncan and Courtney steal food, but they leave a fish from the boathouse behind in the fridge. We cut back to camp, and they've shared the food with everyone. Which is nice. Owen mentions that he thinks he has jungle rot and... like shoves his disgusting foot in, I think, Lindsay's face.
Great. We've already discussed how much love for Owen.
You've gone off already.
Yeah, it's definitely gone. Even more confirmed.
Yeah. There's a smile made of peanut butter in Harold's bed, of course, thanks to Jeff and Duncan. And Courtney is drunk on disobedience, is what I wrote here. She is like so giddy, she's like on a high, she hasn't experienced anything like this before, and she loves it. Mm. She eats one too many ice cream sandwiches, goes outside, and pukes.
Live a life.
Duncan comes out to check on her, and this is my least favorite part of the episode. Duncan comes out to check on her, and Courtney's like, you know, once I did something bad, I just got, I like got the taste for it, and I just wanted more. And Duncan, like, Duncan asks her for a kiss, which isn't the part that I have a pro- which, like, the act of asking for a kiss is not the part I have a problem with, because they've been getting close.
Sure.
But she just barfed.
Yeah.
And he comes out and asks her to kiss him, and then they end up kissing, and it's disgusting.
Yep, and, like, it cuts away to Harold seeing them kiss, and we know that why he reacts the way he does. Like, he kind of has, like, this kind of, like, he has, like, a shocked and angry face. But yes. I really want to kind of change the lore of it a little bit, where he's shocked to see that she just kissed him after barfing, and his anger
after
is just disgust.
Barfing, yeah.
It's just disgust at these
exactly.
Horrendous. Like, what does that taste like in your fucking mouth, Duncan?
I don't want to know.
That is gross as hell.
Okay. Yeah. So... but I don't know. I kind of liked it in the fact that she just threw up and then he walks out not knowing that she just threw up. So it is like...
No. When I watched the episode again today, he wiped something off of her cheek.
Oh my god, really?
It's really, like, hard to notice, but it is there.
Okay. And the other thing was, I have kissed my significant other after she has thrown up.
Yeah, but that was after you had become significant others.
Yeah, you're right.
That wasn't your first kiss, I don't think.
It's not like the worst thing in the world, but like it is kind of, it's just very, I can't imagine that that's a pleasant experience.
Chef comes back in the intercom and he says, if he catches the succulent of his dessert, your butt is mine. And the last challenge of the day.
S-U-C-C. Suck.
Succulent. That is how succulent is spelled, so you know.
Yes, no, I know.
And the campers are just, they have to hang upside down from a tree with, like, their legs over the branch. Duncan falls almost immediately and is, like, almost knocked out. But Bridget comes up, and because she's a lifeguard, she's like, don't worry, he's fine. Owen can't get up, to, like, grab onto the branch, and then he toots. Heather decides, you know what, fuck this, I'm out, and then Owen falls on her.
Finally.
At long last.
I feel like Owen falling on Heather, or Owen causing Heather misfortune is a common
thread.
It's
a very common thread. It's a very redeemable aspect, and it gets
so good. I think that's why people like Owen so much.
Yes. Yeah. I forgot about that aspect of it.
Courtney can't stop laughing at it and then falls off. And Duncan comes up to her. He's like, you really need to take a chill pill, because Courtney's just like, she is a giggling fucking mess right now. So we have Jeff and Gwen on the tree for the gophers now. And Jeff is like, I can hang here for a while. I live for the head rush. It feels so good. And then he falls off.
Jeff's hat defies gravity.
Yeah. Jeff, well, you know what? I think that it's just his brain. I think the hat is his brain at this point. I think he lacks an actual brain up there. So I think the cowboy hat's just able to attach on there.
Well, come on, dude.
Yeah.
It's just my hat.
It's my hat.
And I thought it looked cool, and I accidentally glued it to my head.
So Gwen ends up winning for the gophers, and Chef sheds a tear at her fortitude. We cut to the campfire ceremony, and the campers who... Chris says, the campers who will continue to be campers will receive a marshmallow. They are given out to Duncan, DJ, Bridget, and Jeff... And we have it between Harold and Courtney. And the marshmallow goes to Harold. And the entire team is dumbfounded. Duncan even goes up to Chris. He's like, hey, dude, I have three people on the team. Again, that's three out of six that did not vote for her. I know that for a fact. And he points to DJ and Jeff. And probably, like, also with Courtney being the fourth, that's enough to not have that, but Chris is like, nope, don't care. And he and Chef have to drag Courtney to the boat. She gets in one last, I was a CIT. When she gets thrown on the boat, yeah, she's gonna, whatever. She shouts out, you're gonna hear from my attorney, which starts my least favorite plot line in the entire series, but we will get to that when we get to that.
Great. Now I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Oh my god, just you wait. Just Duncan throws her a skull that he had carved for her, and she loves it. She's like, this is a little weird, but I love it. And this, the boat goes away. And then we get a scene. Harold is burning his marshmallow. And it flashes back to all of the times in this episode where Jeff and Duncan have tortured him. And then we go to the confessional, which this is the first time we actually see how, like, kind of how the votes are tallied. It's either they say it or they put it into the ballot box. Because it's been inconsistent. And Harold breaks it open, replaces the votes, and he's like, let's see how you guys think you're so funny. Let's see what happens when someone messes with your love life and replaces with the votes. Courtney gets voted out. And it's back to him at the campfire with a yes.
So I think two things could be true. I think that Courtney was screwed, and maybe the second most screwed person of Total Drama Island the first season. And good for Harold. I think that's the second. I think that's the second thing that can be true. That finally Harold got his fucking got back at them and got back on them pretty good.
True. It is a little weird though that he chose to get out Courtney and not one of the actual guys.
I think I think maybe he was trying not to be so obvious about it, and maybe that's
fair.
Maybe that's why he decided.
Then maybe he shouldn't have done that on fucking camera.
That's also true.
We'll talk about that in the next episode, because the previously on reveals a lot.
I didn't watch the previously. So
when you watch things on Netflix, it skips the whole intro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out that if you, like, even rewatching the campfire scene, I think it's like a little obvious. Like, Chris knows that, like, Harold fucked with the votes.
Yeah.
And instead of, like, actually following the rules, you know, he's just, like, going by his feeling of, like, it just makes for good TV. True. That, like, man, him changing the votes, man, that makes for some good television. And I remember I was actually, like, really pissed at the end of this episode, because I was like, that's bullshit. Like, then what's the validity of, like, any other fucking episode if, like, a character can just fucking change the ballots?
Yeah.
Well, I think, yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I'm even though I will bask in the glory of Duncan finally being brought down a notch, I will also fully acknowledge that continuity problems, and there is, but I also think that Total Drama Island on its basis and what we learned about the lore behind this whole show is how everything is unfair. The entire show is not fair whatsoever. Yeah. And you have to kind of go into it kind of understanding that, I guess. It sucks. But I agree though. It's bullshit that Chris would just be like, yeah, okay, whatever. Let's continue. But he likes drama too, so.
Yeah.
This I was weird because as a kid I remember really rooting for Harold and then, like, really hating you know, like, Duncan and Jeff and, you know, like the bully type characters. But then, like, weirdly, like, rewatching, I was kinda like, that's bullshit. And, like, I was, and even though, like, I don't think Duncan and Courtney are great characters, I was like, fuck that. I think I feel a different way than you, Chris, where I was like, I don't like that they did that, because I'm like, I like Harold a lot less now that he, sure, like, went out of his way, yeah, to do that.
I should say, I don't like Harold that much of a character as a character either. My gripe with it is with I have more of a gripe with how Duncan and Jeff treat Harold. But then, rather than, like, me actually, like, actively liking Harold, I don't really, like, Harold is whoever. Like, I don't care, really care that much about him. It's more the fact that I hated seeing, like, I find the bullying and the just the obnoxious behavior that's just like, oh, yeah, this is funny. This is funny content, right? Like, I just, I find it to be, it's so played out in cartoons, and especially for kids. Like, I find it to be a really played out trope that's annoying. That's where my anger really lies. It's not me rooting for Harold. And I'm not, like, I'm glad that he did this, but I also, I fully acknowledge and agree with you, though, that it is bullshit at the same time.
My last note for this episode was, that's bullshit, but okay.
Yeah, but okay.
Gabe, any final thoughts?
I just kind of agree with Chris, mostly.
Just the like, they got their comeuppance, that's good.
Yeah, Matt, that means you have to agree with me. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, so, how old was I? When 12-year-old me saw this, I was like, ha, Cordy got her comeuppance, because I was so mad about her not getting voted out over Tyler.
That one episode. True. I forgot about your love for Tyler
Stan.
Yeah, still can't explain it. But I was just like, "Cat, she got what she deserved." And I liked Harold. Not really like analyzing characters as deep as they were, but
sure.
It's funny because he beatboxed.
All right, let's do ratings. I'm going to start out. I'm going to give this episode a 7. I thought it was really good. The challenge was awesome. I liked the drama between Duncan and Courtney. I'm kind of taking it off a bit just because even though, like, I'm okay with the whole, like, tampering with the vote thing, the ending was still a little weird. It's definitely one of the most memorable moments of the series, just because it was like, it was nothing that we had seen before that, which I thought was well done. But also just Duncan and Jeff, like, two characters who I consistently remember really liking, just absolutely sucking in this episode. Kind of take it down. You know, I'm gonna do 7.5 rather than 7.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Who would like to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
In terms of this episode, I think I didn't remember this one too well, but I very much enjoyed the challenge itself. I thought that having, you know, this kind of, like, militaristic kind of down to one person was a very fun kind of focus. I just was not too crazy about the kind of plot that they were pushing, where now we have, like, Duncan and Courtney taking the stage with their kind of relationship. And while it was, you know, fun to see a lot of their interactions this whole season kind of pay off. At its core, the relationship is a bit still basic. It's, you know, like the preppy girl, you know, like, getting a taste of freedom from, like, the bad boy. And I even thought that, like, the bullying itself was a little tropey too. Maybe if the twist maybe was, like, a little more, I don't know, I think it more satisfying of, like, the twist that, like, you know, Courtney got voted off. Despite it being a twist, it didn't hit right with me, because it was like, there was, like, no reason. I was like, why does he get to change the ballot? Where do they keep the ballot? This raises more questions than answers. So with that, I think I'm going to give this episode a 6.
Okay.
Gabe, would you want to go?
Sure. I think I'm also going to give this episode a 6.
Okie dokie.
Mainly just, I don't know, I just really didn't like Courtney in this episode.
Yeah. She's just not, generally has not been a very likable character.
No, she hasn't.
Generally, like, I don't, like, there's nothing that really, like, you root for with her.
Courtney as a character is like a 6, so it makes sense. Right.
Oh, just you wait.
Yeah, no, I know it. I can already tell it's gonna get worse. I was really harsh initially. I gave this episode a 3, but I bumped it up to a 5. Just based off of, I think Matt convinced me a lot on the Courtney Duncan storyline a lot more. Yeah. But I didn't love the challenge as much as I thought I was. I loved the twist of having Chef be the host this time, and I liked
that was fun.
I liked the military aspect of it where they had to go through these brutal challenges. I wish that there was a little bit more order to the challenge. I felt like they were a little all over the place with it, in terms of what was happening with it or not, but I think that they were kind of doing that in order to kind of squeeze in this Duncan Courtney storyline. Duncan just greatly pissed me off during this episode, if you can't already tell. and Courtney, their love thing kind of, I at first I thought it was a little bit more accelerated, but I even now thinking about from it on a different angle now, I think that the what I found very just frustrating was that it definitely fit under this trope that we've seen so many times, and there's nothing more to it outside of that. And then I agree, I felt like the ending was very weird. How we've seen them vote before is them by saying it kind of Big Brother style, where they go into the diary room and say the name who they vote to evict. This is kind of like the same style for this show. That's what they were applying. It would have been kind of cool if like Harold went and found like the tech tent or whatever and like hacked it in, so that way everyone said Courtney or something. Like that could have been a little bit more consistent and satisfying.
That would have been fun. I honestly think that they would not have been able to fit that in with how much stuff happens in this episode.
No, I understand, but even like, but they could have even just done that quickly. Like they spent so much time of him like opening the box and saying like what happens when you mess with someone's love life. Like just like they could have brushed that entire thing aside and all the inconsistencies about it and made the hacking into the votes a lot more interesting. Mm-hmm. Even still, like there'd still be questions, but like it would at least be like a little bit more consistent.
Hey, maybe they can cut some of the throw up from the episode.
Yeah, that too. I agree with that.
Okay, so that is that. That is basic straining. I don't think I ever said the name of the episode. There we go. Matt,
you know what's funny? Well, based on the name of the episode, I actually I saw the episode and it made me like the episode title, and it just made me hungry for pasta. that was my when you typed, you were like, all right, make sure you watch, you know, basic straining. I was like, pasta.
Fuck.
That's so good. I didn't even think about that.
Okay.
All right. Give us the Rama.
Okay. This is season 1. Episode 27. This one's coming in from Miles Smith. Thank you, Miles. The episode title is All Up in Your Drill. Duncan wants to be appointed to class firefighter and make Courtney give up that role, but when an actual emergency happens, he is unprepared. So I thought this one was fair.
Why would you have a class firefighter? Why would you have a baby be in charge of putting out fires? What the fuck? Shit?
I do appreciate that you chose one involving Duncan and Courtney.
And drills.
And drills. Fire drills.
Yes, all up in your drill. So I'm really glad, like, as Chris, you stated, that, okay, you 5-year-old, yes, you are in charge if this place burns to the ground.
Like, by the way, have I ever... I've talked to you guys before about my innate fear of fire drills.
No.
Yeah, so essentially, when I was very young, I had very sensitive ears, and I was also just a scaredy cat generally, so whenever the fire alarm would go off, I would cover my ears and cry as we walked out of the building, and I had to be consoled on multiple occasions throughout my elementary school career, and that fear kind of consistently that had continued basically through high school, but not as to the extreme that it was when I was younger. But yeah, the thing that was meant to keep me safe was really a danger to me in my own brain.
Now you cry stoically.
Yeah.
We had to do a fire drill last year. Someone in one of the science rooms, like just made a bunch of smoke by mistake, and we all had to go outside in the snow.
That's rough. That I
felt bad. I felt bad for the kids in gym.
Oh God, God! Can we all just agree that gym class was a mistake in some ways? Just not the idea of it.
Some ways.
In some ways, the concept of gym, like,
yes.
Yes.
Execution not always the best.
The concept of gym is good. The execution of it is very problematic in a lot of ways.
Yes.
I took dance as a physical education like replacement, and then which by the way, you know, gym is like an every other day, one period thing, while dance was a full period and then an every other day period. So it would replace that gym time and an extra period. And then my senior year, they changed it that it no longer is a, like, gym replacement. So because I wanted to continue with dance, I also was taking gym.
Oh, God. Nice.
Which was a joke because people would just, like, leave gym. I think the most I did in gym was I played Can Jam.
That Cam Jam was maybe like the one sport that I really felt comfortable competing in.
You know what my favorite character naming ever is? The gym teacher from Kobioko, whose name is, as you would guess, Jim.
And on that note, folks,
this has been the Doc of Shame podcast. Get some exercise, you know, like it's good for you. Talk to y'all next time.
Good night and good night.
Good night and good drama.
The Doc of Shame podcast is brought to you by Team Chaos Productions. Find us on Twitter @Doc of Shame and find more of our work at Team Chaos Pods.